The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
Watching crises unfold in trouble spots around the globe, like Syria or Egypt, one can often feel overwhelmed. The stakes are so high, and our ability to influence events can often seem so minimal. But at UWM, a new academic program just approved by the UW Board of Regents could make a difference in leading to a more peaceful world. The program is a new master's degree in sustainable peacebuilding. Joining us on this edition of UWM Today are Rob Rosigliano, Assistant Director of the new program, and Tim Ellinger, Faculty Director and an Associate Professor of Biology. Rob, the stage for building a more peaceful world can take many forms, and you don't necessarily have to be a Secretary of State to make things more peaceful in the way we live.
I think if you interviewed several past Secretaries of State, they'd say it was a liability that they were Secretary of State, actually. Yeah, that's exactly right, Tom. I think what we're trying to establish with this new program, or really is building on a realization that of exactly what you said, that we think that the answer to these big conflicts, these big problems, is we need either lots more money, or we need a bigger military, or we need to sort of take some of these bad actors, you know, and get rid of them one way or another, when really the problem resides between our ears. It's how we think about and how we conceive these issues, and then how we go about trying to address them. And that the change in how we approach things actually makes a critical difference in how we deal with these ongoing and very difficult problems.
Well, you've had a lot of experience traveling to trouble spots in the world, some of which where there have been active wars, and in other places where there are just difficulties in terms of people being civil to each other.
Well, yeah. I mean, so again, we look at those situations and we think, well, if we only could get an agreement, this problem would be solved. Or in a place like Egypt, if only we had an election, that problem would be solved. And we find out that that's not really true, right? We did that once in Egypt, and you know, you look at the situation they're in now, where they're back where they were, you know, 3 years ago without a leader, without a legitimate popularly elected government. And what you begin to realize is that these conflicts that you see in places like Syria, Egypt, many of these unstable places, or chronic poverty that you see in other places, is a product of an underlying system. There's something about this complex set of interrelationships in that society that tend to produce levels of conflict or levels of poverty, levels of human rights abuses, levels of environmental degradation, whatever it may be. And what we tend to do is treat the symptom as if it were the patient. So if we see violence, we want to stop the violence. Well, we've dealt with the symptom, but stopping the violence didn't cure the patient. And what we tend to do is stop at addressing the symptom and not deal with the underlying problem without dealing with the patient.
Tim Ellinger, you're the faculty director for this new program. Also, you teach biological sciences. Tell us about the role that academics will play in this new program aimed at sustainable peacebuilding.
Well, as Rob so well kind of characterized, is we're looking at oftentimes these conflicts or the lack of harmony in these societies is the result of multiple interacting systems. So you have sort of the biophysical systems and all of our understandings academically and research of how ecological systems work together, resources, that sort of thing. And you have the social systems as well, cultural systems working together, as well as institutional systems looking at government and society policies. At the academic level, what we're really trying to do in this program is to develop courses that get students to recognize different ways of knowing that come from these different diverse disciplines. You know, we may have engineers coming into this program that are very good at understanding how, for example, various parts of the built environment work together, getting them to look at aspects of culture and society and how that relates to some of the built infrastructure that they may develop. We may have students coming in, coming from more of the languages, who are very good at understanding how different cultures think, but getting them to be able to think about, for example, how soil fertility and how changes in agriculture agriculture practices resulting from climate change are going to influence basic aspects of culture, basic aspects of gender violence. So the academic program, we kind of characterize it in some way as kind of the anti-masters, where when most people think about a master's as becoming more specialized in your discipline, what we're doing is taking students coming into the program who are very well trained to think within their discipline, getting them to be able to think critically across different metaphors of knowledge, getting them to be able to understand that we have different ways of knowing truth, and that when you're dealing in these complex environments, you have to be able to integrate across the diverse disciplines that in the university structure may be in different schools, colleges, and departments.
So do the courses that will be required for this master's program already exist, or are you creating new courses?
Yes, is the answer. So both. So it's been a really rewarding experience when Tim and I have been going around meeting with different departments and different schools and colleges at UWM is finding people who are in this area. Like this is their interest or their passion, but they haven't necessarily been bold enough or audacious enough to connect what they do specifically to either sustainability or peace building. And what we've done is tap people who are teaching about community organization and community organizing, and how that is a necessary sort of a skill and technique to do in peace building. How the person in public health, how the person in architecture are all teaching courses that hit on the systems that Tim just went through, that sort of comprehensive list of various disciplines that make a difference when it comes to sustainability and peace building, and sort of harvesting folks who are already teaching that area and connecting them to this, or giving them that incentive to teach the course they always wanted to teach but haven't put on paper yet.
And I think Rob really hit it with that last bit about really trying to align incentives in such a way that people who really want to engage as academics in this sort of complex world of sustainability and peace building, giving them the opportunity either by having students where they can teach the course that they've always wanted to teach, or providing research and grant opportunities where they don't have to assume all of the risk that they would assume in a traditional academic environment. Because academics is set up, we set up our disciplines for very good reasons. But one of the things that happens is when we set up that discipline, the reward structure oftentimes makes it difficult for us to kind of take the risk to do something really outside of the traditional department or the traditional discipline that we're living in.
At the beginning of the program, I used as an example the terrible situations we've seen unfold in Egypt and Syria. And it may be important at this point to note that this master's degree program is not necessarily aimed only at people who want to leave the U.S. and go make peace somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean we're working with communities here in Wisconsin, so we're hoping that some of the master's requires 2 summers of fieldwork, which we've built up relationships with sites internationally in other countries, but we're also building up sites here in Wisconsin. So whether it's Milwaukee or say Sheboygan, that people can be engaging with these issues here at home, so both for students who are in this region and want to come back to this region, but also for students who may be coming international who say they really want to actually work here in the U.S. to apply some of these same skills and techniques. And I think the thing that makes it transferable, that allows you to sort of think both about Milwaukee and about the Tirambina Ecological Reserve in Costa Rica is one of the sites that we're working with, is this foundation in systems and complexity thinking, and that all of these systems are complex and dynamic. And the foundation of the program, so going back to we have built some new courses that Tim and I are teaching around systems and understanding systems and understanding complexity and how they apply to these big social issues.
When you hear the word peace building, it to my mind, it sounds like conflict resolution. Is this program about more than resolving conflict?
I think it's about coming up with new ways to get communities to work together to oftentimes envision different ways of relating to each other, relating to their environment. You brought up opportunities here in Southeast Wisconsin. From my own personal research, I do a lot of work on watershed restoration and ecological restoration. And when we get down to actually implementing watershed restoration plans, what you recognize the biggest opportunities or the biggest difficulties are getting all of the different stakeholders that are working or living in these different communities, you know, the farmers, the business people, the environmental NGOs, the transportation people, all of them have interests. And in trying to actually implement the plan, many of my students go into these situations very well trained in the sciences. But what they actually end up doing for their career is negotiation and conflict management. And part of the reason why I'm so excited about this program is that we're able to create the types of courses that when students come into a complex environment, whether it's dealing with water issues, whether it's dealing with transportation issues, health issues, they have to recognize that the system that they're dealing with connects beyond what their own formal training is, and they have to be able to communicate and negotiate values from different perspectives. I remember, for example, 20 years ago when I first came here and I was doing stream restoration in Mukwonago, and one of the politicians at the time told me that I needed to understand that the biggest cash crop in Mukwonago for farmers was houses, because every time a gun went off in Milwaukee, he would sell 10 homes. So you recognize that the violence in one part of society or the lack of harmony is influencing all of these different parts of our environment. And so some of the water issues we're dealing with today are emergent properties of systems other places.
Tim and I were working a while ago on the conflict in Mali. So this kind of the violence has settled down, but there was a period about 9 months ago where we had Islamic rebels and Mali was the big conflict du jour. And so what people would see when they saw Mali was fighting. You have especially if you've got these Al-Qaeda linked Islamic extremist groups who are sort of fueling this violence. But really, yes, the violence was very present, and its peace in that sense was very present here, or the lack of it was very present. But really, if you dug into that, you'd see that what you had was a long-term system where complex ethnic relationships, complex economic relationships, and cultural relationships were now being stressed by accelerated impacts of global warming. And so in a lot of ways, that conflict is really – wasn't just about getting these certain leaders to sort of work together or put their guns down. It was really about the underlying environmental stressors that the violence was a symptom of. And even though the violence has calmed down, if they haven't dealt with the environmental, economic, and political issues that really underlie that, we're going to see violence again.
It's going to boil right over again.
Absolutely. And they connect to global economic issues, for example. Let's go to the Mali situation where there's a lot of water in the south, but that water is diverted to grow cotton, which is a cash crop, which can then be sold to France. So then when you actually have climate problems and droughts and famines, what does the country give up? Does it give up its cotton, which it sells for money, or does it use that water to grow food for the local people? These are the types of trade-offs that are only going to become increasingly contentious in the coming decades.
And I suppose we don't have to go to Mali to talk about the problems with sharing water. Look at Waukesha and Milwaukee, right? I mean, there's a need for conflict resolution or some mediation.
Or mining as an example as well, because many of these resource-rich areas in Africa, for example, are very mineral-rich. And these are areas where countries from outside of Africa are going in to try to gain wealth from those resources.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. Joining us in the studio, Rob Rosigliano, who's Assistant Director of the new Master's in Sustainable Peace Building Master's Degree Program. And with him, Tim Ellinger, who's the Faculty Director of that program. Tim also teaches in biological sciences. You used the word sustainable before peace building. Why? Isn't peace building going to presumably mean that it's sustained, that you've got an end to conflict?
Well, I think when what's interesting about Tim and I is that Tim has really come to this place we're at now more from the sustainability, the environmental sustainability side. He began to get into that, but then sort of realized his work took him to show that, well, environmental sustainability was not just about the physical environment. It was about culture and economics and politics. And I'm coming more from the peace-building end, which is dealing maybe more directly with the politics and the conflict issues, but realizing that doesn't matter what you do there, that if you don't have a sustainable environment, you also haven't actually fixed the problem. So I think we both agree that sustainability, sustainable societies, is the goal, and that peace building is sort of the means. So if you think of peace building as anything that helps to produce sustainable levels of human development and peaceful processes of social change, that peace building is sort of this broad toolbox, all going toward trying to produce more sustainable societies. So that was the bringing together of those two terms. I think we see as equally important. We want to achieve sustainability, and the mechanism to do that is these various peace building approaches.
And it's important to recognize that sustainability as a term has been going through a lot of evolution and misrepresentation. Sustainability doesn't mean that we take something, the way we live, and hold it constant. As an ecologist, one of the things that's fundamental to ecological, quote, sustainability is to allow systems to be able to adapt, to change, to respond to disturbances. The very good example of this are the big fires out west right now in the United States, where the misinformed method for fire suppression, you keep a lot of the small fires from burning. As a result, what happens is over time you get a buildup of a lot of fuel, so your management to prevent fires actually sets the stage for a much larger disturbance of a massive fire, which then totally changes and disrupts the system. The same sort of thing goes on with human societies, and one of the key elements and one of the words that we use a lot in the new courses that we've developed for the Masters of Sustainable Peacebuilding is the concept of resilience, that disturbance is a natural part of these systems, whether they're ecological systems, whether they're social systems, whether they're economic systems, and that by understanding the connections and the feedbacks between these systems, whether it's water, whether it's economics, whether it's power politics and corruption, they all interact with each other, and we need to be able to manage those in such a way that when there is a disturbance, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's a war, that the system is able to actually be resilient and respond to that. Climate change is going to be a really important one, especially in places like Africa, with the increasing frequency and severity of droughts. We're going to have real problems with systems being resilient. We just look right now at Colorado, what it's facing with how is it going to be resilient and respond to the massive floods right now that are destroying parts of Colorado? So we have to recognize that sustainability is not just about holding things constant. It's about being able to have the institutional system, the social system, the ecological system managed in such a way that it can respond to inevitable disturbances.
So that, again, you're not just fixing the symptom, but you're looking at what the underlying causes are
of this conflict. That is really one of the key mindset changes that this master's brings and that the students learn about, is you're not coming into this trying to solve problems. You're coming into this trying to understand the system to make the system function better, to produce better outcomes.
Rob, are there other universities around the country teaching courses like this?
I actually talk a lot about this with folks, and so I can't say I've studied every program to know to answer your question with 100% certainty. But you know, when I talk about what we're trying to do with this program, I actually get the fundamental response I get is, wow, that is new. That's different. It's unique in lots of ways. Maybe it is completely unique. I'm not sure. So the things that I think are in this program that aren't in other programs, there are programs now that do try to be transdisciplinary, right, that say, yes, you need economics, but you need to know engineering and you need to know culture and so on. So I think that is definitely something you're seeing in lots of programs. You are seeing programs that deal with conflict and more sort of holistic ways. The things I think that are different about this program that are additive to those types of programs, one is this emphasis on systems and complexity that we've been talking a lot about, is understanding the whole environment and all these complex interrelationships. The other piece of it that is new and that I really don't see in many programs, if any programs, is the fact that we're spanning the natural sciences and social sciences and humanities. So again, Tim and I are kind of physical representations of that. You know, I'm sort of firmly rooted in the humanities. I'm really not that even good at math. Tim has come at this as a natural scientist, and we've both at least begun to appreciate, if not become more expert at, what the other person does. And so I think one of the things that, a lot of students will get in this is that the folks – I wish I had this program actually when I came and got my graduate education, because I was able to skate through without being a good quantitative researcher, being good at statistics. But now we're basically trying to say you have to understand both sides of this equation. You have to understand the quantitative and the qualitative side of things. You have to understand the natural science of this, and you also have to understand the complex human relationships that are part of this. So I think that those two things, the complexity in systems and the natural sciences and the humanities, makes this distinctive.
And the third part I'll add to that as well that makes this very distinctive is that it's really focused on the practice. Our students will be working two summers that they'll spend in this program. They will be working very closely with businesses, with NGOs, with agencies, with governments, really on the ground, working in the life world, whether it's in the Balkans, whether it's in Africa, whether it's in South Central America, or whether it's here in the southeastern Wisconsin. Really firsthand looking at how sustainable peace building and how these ideas get implemented on the ground in a real situation.
Tim, you talk about working during these internships. Let's talk about the end game here. What jobs, what career opportunities will be available for students who complete this program and walk out with a master's degree in sustainable peace building? Mm-hmm. Who are they going to work for?
Well, I can think of right off the hand four different areas that they can work in. Some Rob can talk about much more directly. He can talk to the government agencies, USAID, a lot of the government agencies. I want to start from sort of the business end of it. In the work that I've done internationally working in, let's say, Central America, or in the Balkans, much of the development work now that gets done is geared towards trying to develop markets. Okay, so it might be mining, it might be markets relating to agriculture. And so what's happening in sort of the new world of development, the donor nations are recognizing is that they have to partner much more closely with businesses and industry in terms of doing peace building. And as a result, I think more and more corporations are bringing people into their operations to assist them with doing sort of community development as part of their business strategies in these transitional parts of the world. This is going to be a growing area in places like Africa. It's a big thing in Central Asia and the places that I'm working with there. So we have that area with people being able to work in the private sector. The other area that many of these students will be with some of the aid agencies, NGOs that Rob has worked with as well.
Yeah. I want to give an example that I came across recently working with a colleague. So a colleague who's working on the consulting side, who's working with a large oil company, I won't name them, who is has a big operation in a particular community. About 30% of the community's economic activity is related to this oil company and to this refinery. And the political leaders in the community are doing everything they can to kick the oil company out. And the company has tried things. They've done all these all these community programs, and they all seem to be backfiring. And so where do they get the jobs? So a lot of organizations, so in this case in the private sector, who are thinking, this makes no sense. Like, we're doing things which should be working and they're not. Mm-hmm. And you realize what you're dealing with is this complex system. And so I think that's what our graduates would be great at, is actually working with them and helping to fix or deal with that community company relationship. As Tim mentioned, I do a fair amount of work with the U.S. government. We're seeing this in the Department of Defense. The military is now thinking of what they do as spanning six phases of activity. And only two of those phases are warfighting. The other two are other four are peacebuilding. And actually, I've been working with them on using systems analysis as a human systems to actually understand these very complex environments they're working in, like Iraq and Afghanistan. U.S. Agency for International Development also saying, hey, we're putting all this money in development projects, but we're really not getting as much bang for the buck. We should be doing more. So they're also saying, hey, we need to understand country systems, whole systems. And again, that's where our people would be very, very helpful.
sort of belie the whole notion of the ugly American, right? Coming over and thinking or presuming that because we have the money, we have the answers.
Yeah, you have to go in. If you're going to actually do mining in a community, whether it's in Wisconsin or in Africa, you don't go in and say, we're going to build a mine. You go in first, you work with the community, you understand their needs, and then you work with them to find a way that they can get value out of the economic activity that creates wealth for them as well as for the company that's doing the investment.
Did you have a tough time selling this to the Board of Regents to get
the
program?
We did initially. So we were sort of pulled off the consent agenda for usually, and that's a sign that you're not going to get approved, right? So Tim and I were there, and we had a lot of very direct, very I think important questions about what does sustainable peacebuilding mean? Is this just about sustainably ending conflict? And so we had a very good discussion with them about what this word means. It's much broader than just conflict. All the issues that we've really just talked about. Where would they get jobs? What's the potential for these people? What's the need for these people?
Well, gentlemen, thank you for a fascinating half hour. It sounds like a wonderful program. Rob Rusigliano and Tim Allinger, the two men behind the master's degree in sustainable peacebuilding, kicking off next fall at UW-Milwaukee. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.